Good morning. I'd like to call the meeting of the Travis Central Appraisal District Board of Directors to order. The time is 11:32 on Thursday, February 17th, 2022. We are conducting this meeting at headquarters of Travis Central Appraisal District at 850 East Anderson Lane in Austin, Texas. And a quorum is present. We are continuing to provide this meeting via Zoom as well as a courtesy. The first item on our agenda is citizens' communication. The first item on our agenda is election of officers for the Board of Directors. Does anyone have a recommendation for chairperson for this coming year, 2022?
My recommendation is that James Valdez continues in his role as chairperson.
I second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Take these votes individually, I guess. All those in favor?
Cartwright, aye.
Yep.
We're voting on James's chair.
All those opposed? That motion passes unanimously. We will go to vice chairperson. Are there any recommendations for vice chair?
I recommend that Teresa Bastian is, with her service as an officer on this board, be given the responsibility as vice chair of the board.
Okay. Second. Okay, that's been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
That passes unanimously. The last position is Secretary Treasurer. Is there a recommendation for Secretary Treasurer?
Well, I guess I can start to recommendations. I'd like to recommend Nicole Conley to serve as the Secretary Treasurer of the Board.
That's been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. We will move on to citizens' communication. I believe we have one speaker signed up, Eduardo Alarcon.
Yes.
Yes.
Come here. Can you start the 3 minutes? You'll have 3 minutes, Mr. Alarcon.
Thank you. My name is Eduardo Alarcon. My name is Eduardo Alarcon. All of my comments deal only with the lake Travis Shoreline properties. A short history is the LCRA held all of the land lining Lake Travis from 714 feet down to 670 foot feet. And it made sense because they needed to control the floodplain. 30 years ago, some bureaucrat in LCRA started selling the land at 3 times its value to property owners. The LCRA sold it to Upland, the property right above the lake, under duress, and only 585 properties are actual waterfront property. And this really should be the defining definition moment for TCAD. My personal experience was I bought a property in 1996. LCRA, a couple months later, came by and made me an offer I could not refuse. A, they could remove any improvements, trespassing, because it was rightfully theirs. They own the property between the belt, between my property and the actual water. B, they could allow public access, which means anybody could tie up at any time behind my home. Or three, sell to third parties. That threat alone drives down the value of Lakeview property. Anybody that only owns up to the 715 foot line. In my case, I bought all three lots, all three strips of that belt, because the convict that lives across the street from me could have bought those from me and blocked my access to Lake Travis. This actually happened in Lago Vista. One smart cookie bought a lot of land of that belt and then told people, hey, you can't have a dock here, else, you know, I'm gonna kick you off unless you pay me rent or whatever his deal was. There's an unequal application all along Lake Travis for the tax code, or the tax evaluations or the appraisals. Properties are being valued as lakefront when in fact they do not even have access to the water because of the barrier created by the LCRA. You may as well be on the desert looking out at the ocean for all the good it does you. If you don't own the strip of land, you cannot build or improve on LCRA property. Ergo, you have lake view, not waterfront property. TCAD contradicts itself because if it doesn't think it's important to have actual access to the water, TCAD actually offers valuation breaks to property owners that are in a cove. When water levels drop to a certain level, I can never pin anybody down to tell me what that point is, TCAD reduces the valuation of the property, then increases the valuation by 10% per year as the water lake level rises until the valuation is returned to its quote unquote normal valuation. So TCAD itself recognizes that if you don't have access to that water, whether it's by drought, whether it's by the LCRA creating a barrier, you do not have waterfront property. You have lake view property.
Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Allerton. The next item on our agenda is the consent agenda. These items may be acted upon by one motion. No separate discussion or vote of any items will be had unless requested by a board member. The consent agenda includes the approval of the minutes from the December 15th, 2021 meeting, taxpayer liaison report, section 2525B report, the accounting statements, as well as personnel report. I'll give the board some time to review those documents, and if anyone has an item they'd like to pull, we can pull it for discussion, or we will wait for a recommendation.
I'd like to pull the taxpayer liaison report, please.
Taxpayer liaison report has been pulled for discussion. Anything else? Is there a motion to approve A through D, A through E, with the exception of the taxpayer liaison report?
So moved.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, let's take a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? That motion carries unanimously. The taxpayer liaison report. 5B.
I wonder if the taxpayer liaison officer is here to answer some questions. I just was curious. We had four written complaints that were given to us, and I wanted to see if there had been any resolution to those, and perhaps the chief appraiser can help us with that. But before she could give me. Just to say my observations, three of the complaints dealt with the Hanlon and Homestead applications. And while the board cannot micromanage the administration of the district staff, and I don't intend to imply that, I do think that homesteads are the most important assets of most people. And it's very personal in making sure that residents' homestead applications are processed efficiently and properly are important. There was one complaint about a delay in the administration of the application that resulted in the person having to pay full taxes and didn't wait for a refund. And I don't know about y'all, but I don't think I could afford a $12,000 hit waiting for my application to be reprocessed and a refund. Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty onerous for a taxpayer. So that the other one had to do with the complaint filed by the gentleman who just spoke to us in the public comment period. And my only observation is that he said that it's difficult to have access to the board, and I'm delighted that he was on the public comment period today. But he also stated that it was difficult to submit something online. And if there's a way that we can, and I hope the chief appraiser will address that, beef up our, I don't want direct emails to each of us individually, but if there was an email to a board link that we could get collectively, or there was a way for the complaint to be filed more easily online, I would hope that we would go for something like that. And I think that's something that we as a board can address, is about how we want to, how communication should come to us, because the legislature has made it clear that it wants the public to be able to communicate freely with the board of directors. And those are my comments. And Blanca, you may have more.
I echo you. Yeah, when I read it, I
Mario will take care of it.
Yeah. And we do have a general policy posted on our website for communication with the board with instructions on how to communicate, but we can make that more visible.
And perhaps easier. I haven't gone to look, so I'm bad on me, but if there was, make it a little bit easier.
Yeah, and not everyone uses a lot of people that don't use the online feature. And I get calls because I'm in real estate from the community, especially Spanish speaking people.
Yeah.
They'll come and they can't get anything resolved. Mm-hmm. And perhaps, I don't know, I know you have all the staff that you need for bilingual people that speak Spanish, but they'll have to come 2 or 3 times.
Yeah. And that's something that I've got my chief appraiser report to talk to you guys a little bit about some of our staffing struggles. And we're struggling like many other businesses and governmental agencies with some staffing issues. But we're working on it.
Yeah. We'll see if we can help.
Yeah.
If we need to go ahead and approve that.
Before you do, may I ask Mario a question?
No question.
Mr. Chairman. What are we doing? I know part of it is the struggle with staffing, but is one of the areas in the Homestead customer service area that you're finding trouble finding people, not just bilingual, but
we have some clerical areas where we're struggling to find people to fill those. When we do fill it, we've got a lot of new people that they are just, they like make a lot of mistakes. It's taking them longer and the quality of the employees that we're able to attract just means that it's taking us a lot longer to get them trained up. And we have to do a lot more checking.
Is there any way that we can enhance training for them? That the board can allocate additional funds, or is there anything that you can think of?
I think we've got the training that we need. It just takes a while. The property tax system is so complicated.
Yes.
That somebody just can't come in off the street and know all the answers. It takes them at least a good season to have gone through and experienced everything so that they can be comfortable.
Particularly exemptions, they are very complicated.
They can get very complicated.
And calls on your attorney quite often, I'm sure, they have to try to interpret things on exemption qualifications.
And we've got a lot of new staff in that department. So we're working on training them, but we lost some seniority. It's just a struggle.
Comments? Motion to approve the taxpayer liaison report.
Seconded.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes unanimously. We'll move on to item 6 on our agenda, the regular agenda, discussion and possible action on appointment of Ag Advisory Board.
And we've got 2 members that are up for one for reappointment and one replacement member.
That's correct.
What page does that start?
Larry Mellenbrook is the member up for reappointment, and Tim Van Akron is a new member who's applied to be on the board.
And Tim would be a replacement for
Maury Potu,
who unfortunately passed away.
Have any recommendations on Ag Advisory Board members?
I would move that we approve the 2 members that have been suggested, Mr. Ballmer and Mr. Ballmer.
Okay. So it's been moved and seconded.
I guess point. Mr. Van Akron, reappoint Mr.
Miller. Okay. Any discussion on that?
I just would like just by way of a little bit of background about how the Ag Advisory Board works with the board, their roles, expectations, and maybe just a little snapshot on what the terms are like. Are these members that there's the terms are standardized, or is there?
They serve a 2-year term. It's staggered. And the Ag Advisory Board meets with our staff appraisals that handle agricultural valuation several times during the year. And they discuss items surrounding agricultural intensity levels, what they're seeing in the market, if there's anything of specific interest that would affect appraised values. This is our way of getting some stakeholder feedback from the community so that we can appropriately direct attention to those areas where it may be something new that's occurring within the market.
So it's just a technical advisory board that mainly interacts with staff.
Yes. Yes.
Could you talk about the survey?
The comptroller does an annual survey, and then we do a survey as well.
Could you talk about that?
Yeah, we sent out a survey asking about what the agricultural applicants in our area are doing in terms of what are they spending, what are their yields, what is an expectation that they have, if they have any issues with their crops or crop rotations, what are they planning this season. Again, that helps us do our agricultural valuations for the year.
I think it was 2 or maybe 3 years ago, we had some members from the advisory board speak to us, and maybe that would be worth doing again. I don't know, like right now, but maybe we could record it since we do have some ability to do that for future, like onboarding board members. Might be interesting really forward, because your questions, I feel like having heard from them really illustrated a lot.
Absolutely.
We could do that. We are thankful for the members that have stepped up, because it's very hard for us to find volunteers to service and serve on these boards. So we are very appreciative of those members that are serving, but we can certainly ask them to join us maybe by Zoom in the next meeting.
At a time that works for them, but I think it was worth doing. Yeah, it's important. I could totally see the value add in having an advisory board and the importance of it, and finding members who get who voluntarily committed and serve in this capacity. I could totally see. I just want you to know more about the interaction between the advisory.
That has been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, let's take a vote. All those in favor of the recommendations as brought forward?
Aye.
All those opposed? That motion passes unanimously. We will move on to discussion and possible action on annual review and adoption of investment policy.
So this is our investment policy. We do this annually, and I will let Leanna tell you a little bit more about any changes that we are recommending.
So Patterson & Associates, our investment advisory group, reviewed the policy, and she had 2 changes. And it's mainly extending the maximum maturity dates that we would allow under the policy in anticipation of interest rates increasing. We could get a little higher yield. It's moving it from a 2-year to a 3-year. And that's really a big change. And our weighted average maturity increasing alongside that.
Approval. I mean, certainly it makes sense to do this, and this is not an uncommon policy change.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, let's take a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? That motion passes unanimously. We will move on to item 6C, discussion and possible action on 2021 property value study.
So in 2020, we had a property value study, and the comptroller found that we had invalid findings in several of our school districts, meaning that they determined that our values were too low. We are in the middle of protesting that and going to district court on that issue. But when you have an invalid finding, it will trigger a property value study the subsequent year. So we had yet another property value study the subsequent year in 2021, and the comptroller has again found our values to be invalid in several school districts, meaning they find that they are too low in those school districts. Now, I know that this is really hard for property owners to understand, because we've raised values almost 20%, but the comptroller and the state are still saying that our values are too low. We would like to file a protest of those findings to see if we can get that changed. But in order to file the protest, the rules have changed from the past. And this year, now, in order to act as an agent and file the protest as a chief appraiser. I have to get official approval from my board of directors, and we have to get approval from the school district board of trustees, and we have to get a signature from the superintendent. There's a lot more steps that we have to go through in order to be able to file the protest, but we would like to file a protest. Our school districts in question in particular are Lago Vista, Lake Travis, Eanes, Leander, and Round Rock ISD. So we've got a resolution for you guys to approve my ability to file a protest on behalf of those ISDs for those school districts.
And I assume that the problem is the same as the prior year with the study in terms of not being able to use the state using sales.
A large part of it is this, the window and the time frame that the appraisal district has to use sales to develop our appraisals. Our assessment date's January 1st, and we have to get our notices of appraised value out by April. So the time frame that we have to use to do our analysis is all of 2020 and, you know, up to mid-February, and then we're starting to crunch numbers, and we can't introduce new data into it because we've got to get our notices out. On the other hand, the state and the comptroller use 6 months on either side of January 1st. So they're using sales as far out as July of 2021. And if you know what our market has been, those sales really, 2021 has been a phenomenal year in terms of market appreciation in Travis County.
They did do time adjustments.
But again, it's still, even with the time adjustments, those are late sales in a completely different market. And so we are, again, they deemed that our values for 2021 were low. We'll have another property value study for 2022. This is our normal cycle for property value studies. And we will be paying very close attention to make sure that we're being as aggressive as necessary to past the state study, because we are now in year two of grace for these school districts, and next year out means that they assign state value and it would harm our school districts. So we anticipate that it'll be a very active and busy year for us, that values will be increasing, particularly in those school districts, as we work to make sure that we pass the property value study and we'll get the results of protests.
This would be, their whole harmless is going this
fire,
right? So
they're going to
be adversely affected.
Yeah. So what happens is, and we still have district court on the 2020, if we prevailed at SOA and the judge ruled in our favor, and it would have brought most of those school districts into valid findings. So if the district's court case gets resolved and they file with us, then the findings are valid. And the 2021 study goes away because it shouldn't have happened in the first place. But if the district court doesn't rule with us and the district court, then the 2020 findings stand. And now we've got 2021 in which the findings, and they're in year two of grace, meaning in 2022, potential that they could get state assigned value rather than local values. And yes, it would create a detrimental effect for the school districts.
But for Largo Vista,
the school districts that we are out in are Eanes, Leander, Lago Vista, Round Rock, and Leander. So it could have implications for all of them. It's pretty much west of IH-35.
How do you resolve the timing issue with the differences in the source data and approaches? I mean, I don't know, especially now with the growth and it's just seemingly you're going to be in sort of this position year after year. I mean, do you see sort of the hospital's office working to resolve some of this, or there's some staunch in their approach? And
They've been staunch in their approach to so far. I think some of what we're confronted with would require some legislative action.
And I know that they're working on actively on that. I just just for all intents and purposes, you know, for school finance, this would mean basically less revenue for school districts to operate with, even though the expenses and the costs, they've already, expended those. And it just really results in cuts. And that means that they're going to have to make dramatic reductions in how they expend for the upcoming years. And so this is something, and for these districts where every penny counts, to say school districts have no little wiggle room is saying too much. And so this technical issue, it's not, you're grappling with the loss of enrollment and increased needs from the student side, trying to sort of rob Peter to pay Paul, but to have this technical adjustment on your revenue is something that you would think we would work hard to sort of resolve so that they're just not being handed some of this adverse impact on their revenue for things that are sort of beyond their control. I mean, it seems like this is a sort of methodology issue. And I know the state has to sort of maximize its revenue because we're so reliant on property taxes. But at the same time, I hate to see students just put in a position where they're making cuts to teachers and staff because we can't resolve this technical issue. I'm hopeful that we can start to opine on our comptroller's office to sort of see, to work with us.
I'd like for the school district to pay more attention to this because during the last session, there were a couple of efforts on the part of some appraisal districts to do something about this. And with no support from the school district, and as a result of the past. And so I hope the school districts are actively involved because they're the ones who are most impacted.
Absolutely.
So we have a resolution before us that we've been asked to consider. It's resolution 2022-0217-6C. We have a motion for passage of that resolution or any amendments, conversation about that.
One more question. So this has never really been as critical an issue as it is this study. And so I'm wondering, what was the defining factor that made this study become such the anomaly? Because I don't recall ever there being this many districts under protest.
The issue, and it really stems from the 2020 study, because we wouldn't be in this boat if it wasn't for the 2020 study. And the issue in the 2020 study is the law was changed, and the chief appraiser under 2301E is prevented from increasing values on properties when the ARB has set the value the previous year, unless I have clear and convincing evidence. And in 2020, that is the year that we got cut off from all of our data. So we had no data. I could not meet a clear and convincing burden of evidence. I couldn't meet any burden of evidence. And so we couldn't raise values. So in 2020, the comptroller would not make an adjustment for those accounts to reflect the law under 2301E that we were not allowed to increase the values on those properties. And that is the crux.
Despite them not necessarily having full access.
Yes, yeah, they would have required us if we had known that we would have needed to force every property owner in that situation to go to the ARB in 2020 to get another board order, we probably would have done that. But we were not aware at that time because the law had changed and the procedures at that time were the comptroller would make the adjustment. And then suddenly the wool got pulled out, the rug got pulled out from underneath us, and they changed their rules to no longer make those kind of adjustments.
Didn't we also at that time ask the comptroller office if they would share their data with us? Because we were cut off from
We asked the comptroller's office if they would share the data with us. It was very well known that we were not allowed. We've got a cease and desist order that we're not allowed to use A board data. We asked the comptroller if they would be using that data, and they sent us a letter saying, no, we would not, we don't have access, we would not be using that data. But then they turned around and used Zillow, which is which is A board data. And we pointed that out to them, and they said, well, we said we weren't going to use A board data. We didn't say we weren't going to use Zillow data, even though it was the same. So, those are kind of the challenges that the appraisal district is confronted with.
I just want to bring that out for those of you that weren't with us in 2020 through that fund. But I mean, we really did work
very diligently, Maria and her team did, to try to get out from this happening.
Sure. If only ABOR would allow us to be a member.
We would love to be a member. We'd love to be a member.
Yeah, allow Zillow. Everyone else.
But we, you know, since then we have developed some alternate sources. They're not as I don't know that they are perfect, but they are good. They are good sources that we can use to do the work that we need to do. So we're thankful for that.
And the other problem, for us as a board and for you, is we have several listed agents going to what they call the silent market.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not listed in the MLS.
Yeah.
So there's no reporting there. And I don't know how they get away with it because they're members of ABOR.
Yeah.
And according to ABOR, you have to, if you have a listing, you have to put it in MLS.
Yeah. Yeah, those are very well hidden.
Yeah.
Back to the resolution.
I would move that we adopt this resolution.
Okay. It's been moved by Ms. Bastian and seconded by Mr. Conley. any further discussion? Hearing none, take a vote. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? That motion passes unanimously. We will move on to 6D, discussion of possible action on conveyance of real property.
And we will need to go into executive session for this. So if you want to go on to the other items, and then we'll come back to that one.
Okay, we'll move to 6E, discussion of possible action on Chief Appraiser's report to include the 2022 calendar, 2022 field work, CAD staffing, taxpayer outreach programs, legislative updates.
So we, I've included for you guys just a rough list of some of the calendar dates that we're looking at for the next couple months. Again, we are working, like all governmental agencies, with staffing shortages and intermittent outages. So, you know, it's a struggle. So we're a little bit behind our normal schedule. We anticipate that our first notice of appraised value run will be April 15th. We will try to get as many properties value and noticed at that on that date, but I anticipate there will be some that we just may not have completed our analysis on, and those will come out in a second notice run, which would be at the end of April 29th. We're anticipating after we do our first notice run that we will start our informal meetings with property owners for those that have started getting their notices for the tax agents. We will start doing our informal meetings. They are now required by statute that we offer informal meetings. So we will start with our informal meetings on April 18th. We'll have a second notice run on April 29th. May 15th will be the first notice run deadline. And then May 30th or 31st will be the second protest deadline. So we anticipate that we should have substantially all of the protests in by that May 31st date. We had, 2021 was a year that we increased values some, but not as drastically as I think they may increase this year. And we had 161,000 protests. So I'm anticipating, given what we're seeing in the market and the reports that we're hearing now, that values will go up substantially. I think we will be reflective of market value. I just don't think the regular taxpayers are going to understand that. So I think that we will see a very, very high increase in the number of protests that we have to handle. We anticipate that we'll get all the data entry done as quickly as possible. Hopefully we'll be able to get that done by June 1st and we can start getting some Excel spreadsheets together, get the ARB scheduling and get the protest scheduled so we can start our formals at the earliest date possible. We're anticipating that for a full robust formal hearing schedule, that probably will kick off around June 21st. And then June 30th will be our third notice deadline, and we will need to wind up our informal hearings around that time as we get more robust in our formal hearings. Again, we have capacity to run 40 ARB panels. I've got 55 appraisers. So I don't have a lot of excess appraisers to be doing both informals and formals at the same time. So we've got a little bit of capacity, but not a lot of capacity. So we want to try to get our formals done as much as we can before the formal hearings start so that we can dedicate our staff to the formal hearings when that time starts. And again, we anticipate that we will continue with formals. We're hoping that we can get the ARB to reach the 90% threshold to certify by July 20th so that we can get certification out to the taxing entities by the July 25th deadline that we're required to have them done. And then, again, hopefully we will have all of our hearings substantially completed by September 2nd, but October 21st would be the final day for formal hearings under the new legislative requirement that only gives us 9 days to complete the remainder of the hearing. So we've got a very, very packed year in front of us, and it'll be a very active year. So when we start doing our hearings and our protests, we are going to be diverting a lot of our resources to that effort. And so we may have to let some other of our services may see a delay in processing time as we are borrowing staff to try to get these very critical things done in a timely manner. So that's what our 2022 calendar is looking like. And I'll give you an update if it looks like any of these dates will slide, and we'll keep you guys up to date on that. Are there any questions about the calendar? So our staff is our appraisal staff is currently out in the field doing their field inspections, gathering their data, doing the discovery that they need. They've started some preliminary valuation analysis, some sales verification, but we will probably become much more devoted to valuation when we start in March. So we're still finishing up the last of our fieldwork inspections as we move forward. The other thing that I had on my agenda to talk to you guys about is staffing. And again, we're not unusual in what we're dealing with. We've got a lot of staff working a lot of overtime. The limited staff that we do have is working a lot of overtime. I'm concerned with the amount of overtime we're asking for them that we will start experiencing some burnout and we might start losing some people because of the work schedule. But we are trying to automate as much as we can, go online with as much as we can to kind of take some of that burden off of staff. And we just encourage the public to utilize those online services that we've got because it does assist us and helps us with our staffing. The other thing that we're looking at in terms of appraiser, and the board was generous to offer me additional appraiser positions, and we're thankful. We're working to fill those new positions. But as we look at what we're competing against in terms of what is being offered in salary, our starting range is between 45 and 48 for an appraiser. And the listings, when we look at the listings, they are starting at 60,000 and going up from there. So we may come to you in May with our budget and ask for an increase on appraisal salaries for the appraisers because, again, we're trying to compete, but it's difficult when who we are directly competing against. And the comptroller is one of the people that we are directly competing against, and they're offering $60,000 as their starting salary. So,
is that the general sort of salary you're competing with?
Yeah, you know, we'll compete with some other appraisal districts, and we are on par with some of the other appraisal districts that surround us. So we've got parity there. My concern is, and my issue is that our workload and work-life balance for my appraisers is nowhere near what they can get if they go to another appraisal district. It's a much easier job to go somewhere else for the same pay. And so that makes us less competitive in that area. Yes.
I'm not one to eagerly want to increase budgets, but this seems like a really critical thing. Is it prudent to wait till May to have that discussion? Because I know then we'll be hiring people in the middle of protest season. It seems like hiring them sooner would help the flow, but make sure things get done in time. Do we need to wait till May, or is this a need now?
We will need to wait to May to see where we are at in terms of what we've got in budget funds, to see if we've got any money that we can devote to that. Because again, for us to increase our budget at this time, we would have to go back to the entities and ask for the increase. So we've got to see where can we see some savings internally within our budget that we can redirect some funds to that specific purpose. So, you know, it's so too early in the year for us to be able to judge. So May be the best time that we would be able to judge where we're at and see if there's any funds that we would have that we could make that. Yeah.
I can imagine it's very hard to hire an appraiser at that salary in Austin right now.
And it's not only just attracting, it's a retention of the ones that we've got, because it takes 5 years for somebody to get their RPA. It's a lot of expense and education that we bear. And once they get their RPA, we want to make sure that they stay. We don't want them leaving because, yeah, again, it's a huge investment for a new person every time that we have to do that.
Are there any other retention investments that might help here?
We do offer a lot of incentives. We're looking at our benefits as well. So that's something that we'll bring to you at May as well. But we do offer health and dental and HRA. We've got a good retirement system. However, for the younger generation, retirement isn't as sexy as upfront take-home pay. But we are looking at other things. We do a lot of opportunities for remote work, which is what we see as a desire. We do flexible scheduling, but we're looking and seeing what other kind of benefits that we can offer our staff that would make it an attractive place to work. And then the last thing, to just give you guys an update with our taxpayer outreach program. We've already launched that and started it in January over your property tax bill. I've got another one coming up next week on exemptions, specifically on exemptions, talk to the public about exemptions. So hopefully we can clarify some of the concerns and questions that have come up in the webinar. There's also a lot of confusion over the changes in the legislation regarding the homesteads and when people can apply for the homesteads. So hopefully we can provide more clarity to the public about the exemptions, the homestead exemptions. We've got another one scheduled tentatively for March 23rd, and that would be information specifically for homeowners who haven't gone through the protest or the notice process to explain it to them. And then we'll do one on notice of appraised value and protest later in the year.
We got this, but it just popped into my head. Maybe in the homestead exemption webinar, we can put something in there about if they do. It seems like we're getting a fair amount of complaints when people did a refinance, if the homestead drops off. So that might be something to remind them to look for.
Yes. Yeah, because you know, when you do a refinance and you've got a deed that gets filed, for us it's a new deed filed. And so we have to look at it as a change of ownership, and we need to know if it's not a change of ownership or you need to reapply for your exemption if the name changes. Yes, yeah, if you go into a trust, yes. Because we don't know when it goes into a trust, we don't know that's the same people. And we need to get a heads up on that. It's always best if you give us a heads up before you do that, so that we can be on the lookout for it, so that when it comes in, we already know we've got it flagged and we know that we need to do something special for it. And that is a legislative update for you guys. And the governor issued a taxpayer bill of rights, and there is a lot of property tax matters on the bill of rights that he published. So we anticipate this will be some of the legislative agenda from the governor's office in the next session.
I heard on the news this morning there's going to be a special session in May.
Oh.
On homestead exemptions.
Okay.
And I think he's doing well. I think the timing is that it will apply for 2022. So that will create some.
Well, he's calling the election on the bills that were passed in the special session.
Okay.
He did make the call for May 7th.
Okay.
For it to be the election date.
Okay, so maybe that's what I heard.
Yes.
I misunderstood it as a special session.
No, it's the election. He called for the special election, and there's two issues related to homestead in the May 7th election. The one is dates back to the session before when we did some school finance reform, and we gave some tax relief to regular homestead owners, but that tax relief did not trickle down to property owners who already had a tax ceiling. So part of that May 7th election is to apply some of that relief to people that have a tax ceiling. And the other issue on the election would be the increase of the homestead exemption for school district, which is mandatory and state required, increasing that from $25,000 up to $40,000.
And you'll talk about that in your seminars.
We will talk about that in our seminars, yes.
So he's moving towards his this goal.
Yes, yeah. And there are again, quite a few of the topics are specifically focused on appraisal issues. So we anticipate that next year we'll be very busy working on some legislative issues.
And I noticed one of the things on his list was that if the first advises house for a certain amount that the appraisal district has to accept that value. That's the practice for Travis County already,
is it not? That is the practice here. We consider, as long as it's an arm's length transaction, right, not a, between family relatives, as long as it's an arm's length transaction, we consider that sale to be indicative of the market value of the property. So we already do that. One of the things that's not clear in his bullet points is whether or not he intends that to only be for the year of purchase, or is that forevermore? And we think there's going to be a lot of confusion of property owners if that's not clarified and made very clear. And if it's forevermore, then it puts us more in a California Prop 13 kind of situation.
We've seen these sort of notarized, these copies of, has there been any impact statements on this in terms of impact on some of these? I guess, because some of these, I think, are probably impacted state revenue.
Oh,
yeah. And I have no idea how to ascertain small businesses. I don't know if that's going to require additional.
That is, that will have, personal property, business personal property represents about 8%. Of our appraisal roll, and that would exempt the bulk of our personal property. And the way that we see it just phrased here, there are opportunities for some loopholes to exist that would exempt even more. So we do think that that would have a substantial impact. The issue with the setting it to the sales price may also have a substantial impact. We also want to say if the value is set to the sales price and that's required by law, we want to make sure that the comptroller is following suit in their property value study, because we don't want them time adjusting up a sale. We have to set it to the sales price. So we see that there's a lot of work that needs to be done just to clarify, not to change the, but just to make sure that they work administratively for us as well. And then one of the things that we've got that has to be an issue that we bring up from the appraisal district side is just the pressure and the time constraints that we are under. We have so much work that we have to do, so much volume of work that we have to do, but we have not been given more time to do it. Resources are limited. It is a struggle every year to meet all the statutory deadlines that we have to in reappraising properties and sending notices out. And, they just added more deadlines for us that we've got to do even more things quicker. So we are struggling with the calendar as it currently exists, and think that there needs to be some significant reform to the appraisal calendar so that we have the time to do the job. We want to do our jobs very, very well, but when we're rushed all the time, you're going to make errors, and we need to find a way to make it so that we've got the time to do the job that we need to do and do it appropriately.
Interesting to see what the administrative plan is carried out. See if they're actually, like you said, piece of the administrative perspective. Transparency could mean anything.
So that is everything in the chief appraiser's report. Are there any questions?
Just quick, going back to the outreach, I know it's delivered by webinars. Is there a way to get that information out differently that you think might get some more uptake with taxpayers?
Actually, the webinars have been really successful for us. I get best turnout that I get doing the webinars. We used to do those live and in person, and we would go to HOAs, and I would, but usually I was talking to an audience of one or two. So I'm getting really good turnout in my webinars. I know that Cynthia is our communication director, and she does a lot to advertise those. We do Facebook ads, we post it, we put it on our website. Any way that we can get the word out, we do. We work with adjacent organizations to let them know. We work with the city to let them know so that they can blast it on their blast as well, because we do want to drive the turnout. But the webinars have been our most successful outreaches. But if you have any suggestions on additional places that we could advertise, we're open to that.
We'll move on to item 6F, discussion of possible action on litigations and appeals related to pending lawsuits and anticipated lawsuits. I assume we're taking that into executive, or is there anything that
we don't have any additional lawsuits. And if there's nothing discussed in the executive, the only item that we have for executive session would be the conveyance.
So at this time, the board of directors will go into executive session at 12:22 p.m. and we will cite section SEC.551.072, deliberations regarding real property. Board may meet executive session and deliberation any matter authorized by the Texas Government Code Section 551.001, Texas Open Meetings Act. We will come back online once we finish discussion and executive and take up our remaining items. The time is 12:39 and the Travis Central Appraisal District's Board of Directors is back from executive session. We will now take up regular agenda item 6B, discussion and action on possible conveyance of real property. Does any board member have a motion?
Do we have a written offer?
We do have a written offer.
I'll make a motion to approve the offer that I've written out there.
Is there any edit to that? As discussed in executive session, right? Is that friendly, Mr. Buckle?
I'm sorry.
Modified as discussed in executive session.
Modifying your motion to say as discussed.
As discussed. Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay. That's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? That motion passes unanimously. We will move on to item 6G, discussion and possible action to add items to future agendas. I know that earlier in the meeting we had talked about the county advisory coming in either through Zoom or in person. I think that was a nice item to have. Anyone else have?
I've talked about it before, but I feel strongly about having a training session for us. Maybe bring in someone to talk about roles and responsibilities for those directors and things that have changed.
And I've reached out to our the attorneys that would do that, and they are available. So we'll send out a survey for you guys to find a date. I would say in lieu of a March meeting, we can do the training, the board training for you guys in March.
It will be in person.
Yeah. So we will send a survey out for you guys to get a date in March that you can do that, that they are available for that.
March and April meeting?
I don't think that we've got any items that we have any deadlines in April. We'll have an April meeting, but it'll just be a general meeting. Our next meeting that we will have substantive issues will be May. And we'll be bringing you the preliminary budget in the May meeting. And we've got some personnel issues that we'll bring up in the May meeting. We've got Juneteenth holiday was passed last year, but we haven't formally added it to our personnel policy. So just a formality of adding that to our personnel policy and minor tweaks to the personnel policy. So it'll be a busy meeting in May.
Are there items anyone would like to see?
I'd actually like to see review for the website functionality, simply because given the discussion today, there may be some opportunity to improve the accessibility of things like being able to email the board or complaints online, etc., as well as just the taxpayer outreach. So some discussion of that. Yeah.
The last item on our agenda is 6H, adjournment. You know, motion to adjourn.
I so
moved. Moved second. All those in favor?
Aye.
At 12:43 on February 17th, 2022, the Charles Central Appraisal District Board of Directors stands adjourned.